Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Frances Alonso reporting. Egypt's government said Tuesday that it's enhancing security in airports over the possibility that a Russian plane departing a Sinai resort was brought down by a bomb October 31st. In a written statement, the ministry said that taking into consideration all possible causes behind the plane crash, including the possibility that it was targeted by a terrorist attack, Egyptian authorities have enhanced security measures at all airports. The statement came after Russia announced Tuesday that a bomb brought down the plane, killing all 224 people on board. This is Russian President Vladimir Putin. He's vowing to find and punish whoever is responsible and called on the country's partners to help identify the culprits. He adds that the murder of our people in the Sinai is one of the bloodiest by the number of victims of such crimes. It will stay with us forever. The Rwandan Senate has endorsed constitutional amendments that would allow President Paul Kagame to stay in office for another two decades. The vote Tuesday in the Senate was unanimous. The proposed changes will be put to a national referendum where they're expected to win easy approval. The 58-year-old Kagame has ruled Rwanda since his army ended the 1994 genocide and ousted Hutu extremists from power. A Kenyan official says a suspected Islamic extremist grabbed a rifle from an officer and attempted to shoot his way to freedom from a military camp where he was being held in Garissa in eastern Kenya. The Garissa County coordinator said Tuesday that the suspect snatched a rifle from one of the officers and then tried to escape. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said Tuesday that the Islamic State group will feel pressure in the coming weeks as the United States, France, and other allies increase their efforts against the militants. He spoke in Paris after meeting with French President François Hollande and discussed different ways in which their governments can be more effective in battling the Islamic State. VOA correspondent Lisa Bryant is in Paris and tells us more about what's being done inside and outside of the country in response to the attacks.
French police have carried out dozens of more raids, arrested more than 100 people. Well, I should say some of these are house arrests. Others have actually been arrested around the country. And then sort of more internationally, France launched a second series of strikes against the Islamic State group in its stronghold, Syrian stronghold of Raqqa. So at the same time, there's also been a big security ramp up. The government now says that about 115,000, possibly more, police, gendarmes, and military are mobilized across the country.
Again, that is Lisa Bryant reporting from Paris. U.S. House Speaker Paul Ryan, meanwhile, Tuesday called for a pause in a White House program to settle Syrian refugees in the United States, citing security fears in the wake of the Paris attacks. The Republican speaker joined half of U.S. state governors in urging President Barack Obama to suspend the scheme, calling for a full review of the vetting process to ensure that jihadists do not slip into the country among the refugees. This latest call comes as the UN Refugee Agency is criticizing governments that are demanding refugee resettlement programs be curbed after the discovery that one of the Paris attackers slipped into Europe and the wave of Syrian migrants escaping the country's war. U.S. President Barack Obama pledged Tuesday to help Asia-Pacific allies boost their maritime security as part of talks with the leaders in the Philippine capital of Manila.
My visit here underscores our shared commitment to the security of the waters of this region and to the freedom of navigation.
The White House announced a package of up to $259 million in new aid over the course of 2 years. It includes $79 million for the Philippines. Israel has outlawed an Islamist group it accuses of playing a key role in instigating violence related to a Jerusalem holy site that sparked weeks of Palestinian unrest. The government announced Tuesday that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's security cabinet approved the widely expected measure. Security forces later closed 17 organizations associated with the Islamic movement in Israel. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry praised the courage of the French people in responding to terrorism following a meeting in Paris with French President François Hollande. Meanwhile, Moscow has confirmed terrorism was behind a Russian plane crash in Egypt, and France has launched fresh strikes on ISIS targets.
That's Lisa Bryant reporting from Paris. Details next.
Also, the UN Human Rights Agency says the Islamic State has gained control over central Libya. And Reuters news agency says the UN plans to send 300 peacekeepers to the Central African Republic to provide additional security for the visit of Pope Francis.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from DRC, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry praised the courage of the French people in responding to terrorism following a meeting in Paris with French President François Hollande. Meanwhile, Moscow has confirmed terrorism was behind a Russian plane crash in Egypt, and France launches fresh strikes on ISIS targets. Lisa Bryant reports from Paris.
Speaking to reporters in Paris, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said French President François Hollande will hold talks with President Barack Obama in Washington next week on ways to ramp up efforts to target the Islamic State group, or Daesh.
My sense is that everybody understands that with Lebanon's attacks, with what's happened in Egypt, with Ankara, Turkey, with the attacks now in Paris, we have to step up our efforts to hit them at the core, where they're planning these things, and also, obviously, to do more on borders and in terms of the movement of people.
Hollande has vowed to strike without mercy at the Islamic State group, which has claimed responsibility for the Paris attacks. On Monday night, France launched a second series of airstrikes in 2 days against IS targets in Raqqa, the group's Syrian stronghold.
La Syrie est devenue la plus grande fabrique de terroristes que le monde ait connue.
Speaking to French lawmakers on Monday, Hollande called for building a coalition to defeat IS. He also said he will meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin, whose country confirmed Tuesday that terrorism caused the crash of a Russian airliner over Egypt. Closer to home, police continue to search for the suspected eighth assailant, identified as Belgian-born Salah Abdeslam. Authorities are also searching for leads on Belgian Abdelhamid Abaoud, who's suspected to have helped plan the attacks and reportedly escaped to Syria last year. French police carried out fresh raids around the country in recent hours. Authorities say more than 100 people are under house arrest and 23 have been arrested.
Il y a peut-être, il y a en France, en Belgique, des complices.
Speaking on French radio Tuesday morning, Prime Minister Manuel Valls said authorities still don't know if there are accomplices in France and Belgium or the number of people involved in the attacks, suggesting there may be other assailants on the loose. Meanwhile, security in France has been sharply ramped up. Soldiers have been patrolling Paris streets for months, ever since the last set of terrorist attacks in January. The government now says about 115,000 police, gendarmes, and military are mobilized across the country. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says migrants and refugees should not become scapegoats following last Friday's terrorist attacks in Paris. It says many are fleeing terrorism by the same people responsible for the Paris attacks. Adrian Edwards is spokesman for UNHCR. From Geneva, he spoke to VOA's Jody Capua about the refugees and migrants following the attacks.
Refugees are people who are fleeing war and violence. Many of the refugees who are coming to Europe have experienced the kind of violence and worse than we've seen in the attacks in Paris. So they're very much people in need of protection. Now, with the attacks in Paris, that of course has focused attention on a lot of things. We're in an environment of fear. It's very, very important but in terms of the response there is to this, that we don't lose sight of that even when doing everything that can be done to protect communities, protect society, to protect countries, that asylum isn't forgotten in that process. These are people still in desperate need of safety and in need of help for their lives.
Have you recommended any changes in regards to vetting the refugees or registering them?
From the beginning, we have been urging states to immediately put in place an effective reception, registration, and screening mechanism upon arrival in Europe. And that's because it's terribly important that countries know who are refugees, who aren't, what the protection needs are, what the other urgent needs are. And people who are found to be refugees should be provided with the proper help that they need. There's also important measures that are needed still, and with regard to relocation, improving the management of the situation in Europe. Now, with this added factor of the security concerns that are now very prominent in the wake of the Paris attacks, it's enormously important that the processes are managed well. And as I said earlier, that we don't lose sight of the fact that there are many, many people fleeing violence who are desperately in need of help.
We've heard critics here, even in the United States, saying that the terrorists are sneaking in along with the refugees. Have you seen any evidence of that?
Well, it's very important that refugees aren't turned into scapegoats, that they don't become the secondary victims, if you like, of these most tragic events. There are processes in place for looking at the security considerations to do with refugees and others. Fundamentally, you cannot be a refugee if you are a combatant, if you're someone involved in serious human rights violations or crimes. You're excluded by the very legal definitions that underpin what it is to be a refugee. Countries themselves have the responsibility, in addition to that, for looking at the security arrangements that are in place for people. And it's important that those processes do work along the way. But as I said, we mustn't lose sight here of the fact that we're dealing now with a world of record numbers of people forcibly displaced, people who have no option but to seek safety elsewhere. And there has to be a solution for them too.
We've seen recently a roadmap between the EU countries and the African countries on controlling African migration. But what's happening in Europe now? Are you seeing any movement towards a cohesive plan to deal with the refugees and migrants?
Well, sadly, what's happened in Paris is likely to lead to a deepening of divisions between countries over whether the response to this should be strengthened border protection versus strengthened asylum protection. We are in a very difficult time at the moment, but as I said before, it's very, very important we don't lose sight of the objectives here and the human rights aspects of this. Refugees, it would be a tragedy if they're scapegoated for what has happened. There are enormous numbers of people in great, great need of help. And we have to work towards countries understanding these needs together, us all coming together and finding a united and coherent response to this.
Adrian Edwards is spokesman for UNHCR from Geneva. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kapua.
One of the suicide bombers who attacked Paris last Friday was carrying a Syrian passport and apparently had arrived on the shores of Greece last month on a refugee boat. The discovery has intensified the already heated debate over the migrant influx into Europe. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
French prosecutors confirmed Monday that Ahmad Al-Mohammed, believed to be a Syrian national, was among the attackers who blew himself up at the French national soccer stadium in Paris. His passport, thought to be a forgery, was found near the body. Al-Mohammed's fingerprints matched a set taken by Greek officials on the island of Leros in October as a group of around 70 migrants came ashore. Marine Le Pen, the leader of France's far-right National Front Party, expected to poll strongly in upcoming regional elections, was quick to react.
La dissémination de ces migrants dans les villages, dans les villes en France, peut faire craindre, bien entendu.
She said that the spread of these migrants in villages and towns of France could prompt fears of the existence of terrorists who take advantage of these population movements to come and strike us, not only in the heart of the capital, but in other French towns. Poland warned it might pull out of a European deal on the resettlement of refugees out of security concerns. The President of the European Parliament, Martin Schulz, warned against conflating the terror threat with Europe's migrant crisis.
Die fliehen vor dem gleichen dramatischen Terror,
To blame the migrants, he said, would mean calling the victims the perpetrators, and that is the last thing we should do. Security analyst Sajan Gohel of the Asia Pacific Foundation cautioned that most of the attackers in Paris were European citizens.
If ISIS really wants to carry out attacks in the West, they don't need to import terrorism through refugees. They can recruit from within our own societies.
Gary Van Gulik of human rights group Amnesty International warned against a knee-jerk reaction.
What we need now is leadership in keeping us safe without harming, violating the human rights of those who need protection as well. The irony, of course, is that people who are being blamed for this are fleeing the exact same type of terrorism, violence and horrors at home.
Security analysts say ISIS likely intended the rapid identification of Ahmad al-Mohammed and his route to Paris as the group looks to exploit tensions over migration in Europe. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Thank you, Henry. Meanwhile, a boat carrying about 20 migrants capsized today off the Greek island of Kos, killing 9 people, including 2 children. The International Organization for Migration says 7 people were rescued. The IOM says 552 migrants and refugees have died in the Aegean this year while trying to reach Europe. More than 3,500 have died this year across all seaborne routes to Europe, including that from North Africa. In the U.S., about a dozen governors who are the heads of individual states say they will not accept Syrian refugees following the Paris terrorist attacks.
The UN Human Rights Agency says the Islamic State has gained control over central Libya. Its new report says the militants are carrying out public beheadings and amputations. Victims include Egyptian Copts, Ethiopians, Eritreans, and a South Sudanese. The report says the terrorists recently expanded their control over the cities of Sirte, Harawa, and Nofilia. A recent U.S. airstrike in the city of Darna is believed to have killed an Islamic State military commander. The Islamic State fighters entered Libya as local militants, divided the nation, and set up 2 competing governments after the overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi in 2011.
Reuters news agency says the UN plans to send 300 peacekeepers to the Central African Republic to provide additional security for the visit of Pope Francis. He's scheduled to be in Bangui on November 29th and 30th. The Pope's visit to CAR would follow visits to Kenya and Uganda. The Security Council is expected to approve a request by Secretary General Ban Ki-moon to send Senegalese peacekeepers from Ivory Coast to Bangui. Pietro Parolin, the Vatican's Secretary of State, yesterday expressed concern for the Pope's safety in CAR, where sectarian violence has caused major displacement and civilian deaths. He said a decision can still be made to cancel the visit. More than 10,000 police and military peacekeepers are currently in the country. An additional 900 are expected to arrive for a planned national election on December 27th.
The Rwandan Senate has unanimously approved a constitutional amendment that would allow President Paul Kagame to potentially stay in office until 2034. The proposed changes would be put to a national referendum where they are expected to win easy approval. Mr. Kagame has ruled Rwanda since his army ended the 1994 genocide and ousted Hutu extremists from power. Under current law, he had to step down at the end of his second election term in 2017.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhi, 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry praised the courage of the French people in responding to terrorism following a meeting in Paris with French President François Hollande. The UN's Human Rights Agency says the Islamic State has gained control over central Libya. And Reuters news agency says the UN plans to send 300 peacekeepers to the Central African Republic to provide additional security for the visit of Pope Francis. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at African News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
In Angola, the trial continues today of 17 Angolans accused of planning a rebellion and coup in a case that rights groups say shows the government's intolerance of dissent. Authorities arrested the young activists in June after they met at a bookshop to discuss a book called From Dictatorship to Democracy. Their defense lawyer told the court yesterday that charges should be dropped because they broke no laws and have a constitutional right to freedom of speech. Amnesty International calls the trial a travesty of justice, while Zeneda Mercado, a researcher for Human Rights Watch in Angola and Mozambique, says it is a moment for Angola's judiciary to show it will respect fair trial standards. Angolan judges should show independence and not permit this trial to be used as an instrument to silence the government's critics, she said. VOA's Portuguese to Africa service reports the trial is expected to last until Friday. Angolan President José Eduardo dos Santos has been in power for 36 years, longer than all but one other leader on the African continent. Rights groups say his government has used arbitrary detentions, torture, and extrajudicial killings to suppress critics and stay in power.
A new report finds that children across the East and Southern Africa suffer huge amounts of abuse. UNICEF says this epidemic of violence hurts more than just children. It hurts society. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Researchers say they have found a staggering incidence of violence against children in East and Southern Africa. The numbers, indeed, are hard to swallow. The new study released Tuesday found that 2 in 5 girls under 18 have endured sexual abuse, and that more than 7 in 10 children have reported severe beatings at home or school. In Tanzania, for example, kids said those beatings included being kicked or punched. The study is a collaboration between many agencies, including the Africa Child Policy Forum, Save the Children, and the United Nations Children's Fund. James Elder, regional head of communications for UNICEF in Eastern and Southern Africa, says research is still being done on what causes these countries to have a disproportionately high rate of child abuse. Though he notes that child abuse is a worldwide phenomenon that transcends culture and nationality. He says possible causes include social stresses, pervasive violence in society, instability, and poverty. He says the solution is equally complex.
That really does involve everyone from families, mums and dads, to governments. So we're talking about parents and children being equipped with life skills, having an understanding about how to deal with conflict resolution, how to deal with frustrations in ways that don't involve hitting children. We're talking about changing attitudes in the way children are seen, giving children a higher standing in society, which obviously is a long-term strategy, but it's very important.
The scars of abuse linger well beyond childhood, he says. And they hurt everyone.
Research shows that children who constantly have violence at home do worse at school, potentially have less learning impact. So that parent has brought that child into the world and therefore has a responsibility.
And he says parents should think of themselves as well. Africa's population is growing in leaps and bounds and is significantly younger than any other continent. And so, he says, caring properly for children isn't purely for children's sake. One day, these children may be the ones caring for their aging parents. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
African birth registration officials meeting in Cameroon say more than half of births in Africa are not registered, which can make it hard for children to enroll in school or access health care. Experts say legal reforms and education for parents and registration authorities are key. Moki Edwin Kinziga reports from Yaoundé.
The Yaoundé Central Hospital reports an average of 180 births per month, but the district's civil registrar, Dina Munjowa, says her office only processes about 60 birth certificates each month. Parents have 3 months to register their babies, but she says many don't understand the process.
For children born out of wedlock, the law says that the father's information should be left blank or a child is recognized. But most of the times they will come with their grandfather's name or that the father did not show up. Most of the times people come here without their delivery certificate from the hospital. Most of the times they come, let me say, 2 years or 3 years when the child is about to go to school.
Cameroon's Ministry of Basic Education says at least 40% of children enrolling in primary school do not have birth certificates, which are required by law. That is on par with the situation throughout much of the continent. African birth registration officials meeting in Yaoundé say just 39% of newborns are registered at birth. The officials blame administrative delays and poor communication with parents, in particular in rural communities. Jean-Luc Mastaki, Economic Affairs Officer at the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, says conflicts in places like Nigeria and CAR have also displaced millions of people, making it difficult for them to register their babies and children. The laws are often not designed to accommodate displaced people.
Within Central and West Africa, where we have a lot of demographic movement, we have to understand our population, who is who. It's about security. To master who we are, how many are we, is also related to human rights. Unless you have your Civil Registration Act, you cannot have access to some protection related to human rights. It's all about identity.
Mastaki says many Francophone African countries require certificates of delivery from hospitals, but that ignores the reality that more than 40% of children in Africa are still born at home or in their communities. Kadausa Faisam from Cameroon's Ministry of Territorial Administration says they also need to better train civil status registration officers.
We realize that we have a problem. The personnel in charge are not well qualified. We realize that population are not well sensitized about the importance of civil registration. The most thing is the problem of training. Most of them are recruited on the spot without any basic training concerning civil registration. If you go to main civil registration, which is city council, our mayor are not trained.
Countries like Senegal, Uganda, and Tanzania have been using mobile technology to allow parents to report births by SMS, but experts say the impact of that technology is still limited by poor cell phone penetration in some rural areas. The number of African countries using mobile phone birth registration is expected to double from 15 to at least 30 countries by 2020. Moki Edwin Kinziga for VOA News, Yaoundé.
This is Africa News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. It's 29 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, exceptional future leaders will gather for this year's World Bank's Youth Summit to tell the story of young people's role in the fight against climate change. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests discussing how youth can inspire communities everywhere to take action. That's next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of The Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical jam. I guarantee.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry praises the courage of the French people in responding to terrorism following a meeting in Paris with French President François Hollande. The UN's Human Rights Agency says the Islamic State has gained control over central Libya, and Reuters News Agency says the UN plans to send 300 peacekeepers to the Central African Republic. Coming up, we'll have music from the DRC, and in our feature segment, the UN World Food Program is expanding its school feeding program for more than 240,000 children in Guinea. I'm Kim Lewis with the Hayes Wuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. And, of course, it's time now for the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young. Happy Tuesday, Sunny.
Happy Tuesday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, as usual, it's been a big day in African football.
Very big day, Kim. There are 14 qualifying matches for the 2018 World Cup in Russia. Remember, VOA World Cup fans, these matches on Tuesday are the decisive second leg of home and away series. The winner of each series, determined by goal aggregate, advances to the final round of African qualifying for Russia 2018. As I mentioned on Monday's Sunny Side of Sports, six African teams advanced to the final stage over the weekend. They are, in alphabetical order, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Gabon, Guinea, Morocco, Uganda, and Zambia. In the first African qualifier to finish on Tuesday, Libya defeated host Rwanda 3-1 in Kigali. The Libyans advanced to the final round on a 4-1 aggregate. And let's give a sunny side of sports shout out for Munir from the Libyan squad. He had a brace in Tuesday's match in Kigali, finding the net in the 36th minute and again in injury time near the end of the World Cup qualifier. In another result from Tuesday, Cameroon and visiting Niger played to a goalless draw in Yaoundé. The indomitable Lions of Cameroon, quarterfinalists at the 1990 World Cup in Italy, go through to the final round of African qualifying on a 3-0 aggregate. Ghanaian football fans had reason to cheer on Tuesday. Their beloved national team, the Black Stars, beat the visiting Comoros Islands 2-0 in Kumasi to advance to the final round. Wakaso and Jordan Ayew had the goals for the Black Stars. The Super Eagles of Nigeria spread their wings and flew into the final round with a 2-0 victory over visiting Swaziland in Port Harcourt. Simon and Ambrose had second-half goals for the Super Eagles. Also advancing was Congo Brazzaville, which defeated visiting Ethiopia Tuesday 2-1 and moves on with a 6-4 aggregate victory. In one more result, the Pharaohs of Egypt cruised to a 4-0 victory over visiting Chad and advanced on a 4-1 aggregate.
Hey, g'day, mates. Remember me? This is the old sports emperor with a red-hot listening tip. That's right. Give a listen to my pal, the bright and lively Sunny Man on the Sunny Side of Sports, right here on the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. Dr. Larry Zamoje here, Chairman, Chief Executive, Sports Radio 88.9 Brila FM. Keep getting sporty sunshine with Sunny Young. We all do at Sports Radio 88.9 Brila FM, broadcasting out of the cities of Lagos, Abuja, Kaduna, and Onitsha in Nigeria, as well as the World Wide Web on www.brilafm.net. I tell you this. It's always a thrill, yes, a thrill, to remain on the sunny side on Brilla with Sunny. Keep listening, Africa.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Long-distance runners from Kenya, Ethiopia, and Namibia won marathons over the weekend in Turkey, Spain, and Japan. Our Daybreak Africa sportsman Marco Uma has more details for us.
In athletics, Ethiopian Amane Gobayna clocked 2 hours 27 minutes and 25 seconds to win the women's race at the Istanbul Marathon in Turkey on Sunday. Kenyan Elijah Chelimo won the men's race. In Spain, Kenyan John Mwangangi set a course record of 2 hours 6 minutes and 13 seconds at the Valencia Marathon. Namibian Beatrice Naigambo set the women's course record with a winning time of 2 hours 26 minutes and 58 seconds. In Japan, Ethiopian Atseba Beyesa clocked 2 hours 25 minutes and 44 seconds to prevail at the inaugural women's only Saitama International Marathon on Sunday. Kenyans Geoffrey Kamoror and Agnes Tirop are nominees in the multi-terrain category for the 2015 IWF World Athlete of the Year Award. Kamoror and Tirop were convincing winners in the men's and women's races, respectively, at the World Cross Country Championships in Guiyang, China in March. The 9 men and 9 women nominees will be wilted down to 3 men and 3 women. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa.
The Voice of America, VOA.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
If you tuned into Monday's Sunny Side of Sports, you heard me report how Russia's recent suspension from World Athletics for doping violations has raised concern in Kenya that the East African distance running power could also face sanctions. In Kenya's lush Rift Valley region, which has produced some of the world's greatest distance runners, athletes and coaches say they're worried about possible penalties from the IAAF, the governing body for international athletics. In the last few years, more than 30 Kenyan runners have failed drug tests, including Rita Jeptu, winner of the Boston and Chicago marathons. At this year's World Championships in Beijing, Kenya topped the medals table for the first time, but that achievement was tarnished a bit when the IAAF said 2 Kenyan athletes failed doping tests. Kenya's former world record holder in the marathon is Wilson Kipsang.
If the Kenyan Federation and the Kenyan government are not strict enough, are not ready enough to intervene the doping issue, I think if IAAF will really take an action, if IOC will take an action and maybe ban Kenya, I think it will be so unfortunate to Kenya and to athletes.
Wilson Kipsang has won marathons all over the world, including 3 of the major ones, Berlin, London, and New York. Kipsang says a cloud of suspicion is now starting to hang over all Kenyan runners.
They will start to question the performance of even the clean athletes. And when they start to question, you find that it will not be interesting so much. Even if you run very well, other guys who are not well informed in athletics or in the sport, they will think that, oh, even this one is using drugs. Oh, even this one is using drugs, you see? But those who understand the sport, that tests are done, doping is done, people are tested. If results comes out as clean, you are clean, you see? That we should trust. But if one has been found to have doped, then he should be in for it.
Meanwhile, the Irishman Colm O'Connell is regarded as one of the top coaches in Kenya. He's coached many of the country's top athletes, including world and Olympic 800-meter champion David Rudisha. Coach O'Connell says Athletics Kenya should have paid more attention to a documentary earlier this year by a German broadcaster.
After that German documentary, I think the Federation of Kenya, rather than kind of, in a sense, sweeping it under the carpet, should have started tackling it then. But we kind of gave the impression at that time, oh, it's just a few individuals, and it's okay, we'll sort it out after the Olympics. I think that's when it was maybe at a manageable level. But now, with the increase in the number of individuals who have been found to be positive, it's now becoming, of course, a matter of grave concern.
Coach Colm O'Connell talks about grave concern. The IAAF said Tuesday it's investigating Kenya for alleged doping cover-ups. That has to be of grave concern to Athletics Kenya. The chief executive officer of Athletics Kenya is Isaac Mwangi.
As Athletics Kenya, our policy is very clear. We do not condone doping. We will not hide anyone who's caught doping. Of course, we have to give them what you call due diligence. We have to do due diligence. We have to give them their right to hearing. But most importantly, our rules do not allow doping. And anyone caught doping, there is no way out. We'll expose you, we will kick you out of our competition, and we'll not allow anyone to taint the good name that this country has always had.
That's Isaac Mwangi, the CEO of Athletics Kenya. In National Basketball Association news, the Philadelphia 76ers and defending champion Golden State Warriors are headed in opposite directions to start the season. The Warriors have been red hot, winning their first 11 games. They'll go for their 12th win in a row later Tuesday night when they host the Toronto Raptors. The 76ers, meanwhile, have lost their first 11 games of the season. And if you go back to last season, Philadelphia has now lost 21 games in a row. In action Monday night, Philadelphia lost to the visiting Dallas Mavericks 92-86. German star Dirk Nowitzki played a key role for the Mavericks. In Texas, the host San Antonio Spurs won their fifth straight game, topping the Portland Trail Blazers 93-80. Kawhi Leonard had 19 points, and Argentine star Manu Ginobili added 17 for the five-time NBA champion Spurs, who now have a record of 8 wins and 2 losses. If you're just tuning in now to the Voice of America, the big African football news, lots of 2018 World Cup qualifiers played on Tuesday across the continent. Let's run down the teams that have advanced to the final qualifying round by winning their series on Tuesday. Libya, Cameroon, Ghana, Nigeria, Congo Brazzaville, and the Pharaohs of Egypt, they're all through to the final round of 2018 African qualifying with match victories on Tuesday. So congratulations to those teams, and we'll have more updates on the show tomorrow. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to Yahias Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 1730 hours UTC, right here on the Voice of America.
Coming up, the UN World Food Program expanding its school feeding program for more than 240,000 children in Guinea. And next, new guidelines for those living with the HIV virus. But first, some music. Here is Ricardo Lemov from the DRC with Mambo Yo-Yo. Ricardo Lemov from DRC with Mambo Yo-Yo.
Well, schools in Guinea are reopening this week after the summer break. The Ebola crisis has hurt many of the country's most economically vulnerable, so the UN World Food Programme is expanding its school feeding programme for more than 240,000 children in Guinea. Elizabeth Foray, WFP's country director in Guinea, tells Ricky Shryock that the programme has grown from providing food to 735 last year to 1,605 primary schools this year.
The schools are reopening after the summer holidays. It's extremely good news for Guinea and the World Food Programme. We're supporting the effort of attracting children back to school through our school meals programme.
How essential is the school meals programme, especially in light of this recovery from the Ebola outbreak, because the outbreak significantly impacted farmers' livelihoods, but also access to markets and other people's livelihoods. So I'm assuming WFP is finding that more people are food insecure in Guinea than before the outbreak.
Yes, we have found that it's been a significant impact on the agriculture sector. There are a number of extremely vulnerable communities who have suffered either directly or indirectly as a result of the Ebola outbreak. So one of our responses in terms of how to support communities to get back on their feet and recover from this crisis is to expand the school meals program. The school meals are basically in areas where there are high rates of food insecurity and malnutrition, where the primary school enrollment rates are particularly low, and the expansion that we're doing right now is in areas that have suffered from the Ebola epidemic. So we're finding that those are the communities where people are particularly vulnerable and where they need that extra support. And school meals provides a safety net, a necessary safety net for vulnerable families. It helps boost school enrollment. It helps boost retention rates and achievement rates in school, and particularly for girls. And since a number of the canteens are being supplied with locally produced food, there's also an impact on the local farmers in terms of boosting production, boosting income, and really helping create a school meals program that is community-based and community-driven.
I know part of WFP's program is not just providing meals at school for all the students, but to provide take-home rations to girls who attend school regularly. Why does WFP single out girls in this way? Are they more vulnerable for attendance, and how?
Yes, definitely. We're seeing that girls are particularly vulnerable. They make up 3/4 of the number of children who are not currently attending primary school in Guinea. And the take-home rations that we provide, we're providing those to all the girls at school based on the girl's attendance. So if a girl is attending regularly, then she receives her take-home ration. So it's a conditional support. And it acts as a strong incentive for the girls to stay in school It also acts as a kind of barrier to early marriage and other dangers associated with early pregnancy. What we're seeing is that the girls who stay in school longer are more likely to lead healthy lives themselves, able to provide for their families in the future, and therefore contribute strongly to reducing education and security. I would like to point out this expansion in the beginning of the World Food Programme school meals activities has been made possible by basically a very generous contribution from USAID.
That was Elizabeth Foray, WFP Country Director in Guinea. She was speaking to Ricky Shryock from Conakry, Guinea.
The World Health Organization has issued new guidelines for those living with the HIV virus. Implementing those guidelines could be a problem for Kenyans. Lenny Ruvaga reports from Nairobi.
Jacinta Wangeshi takes her daily dose of antiretroviral medication known as ARVs, which slow the advance of the disease. The single mother of two has been living with HIV for 11 years. She gets her medication for free at her local health center on the outskirts of Nairobi. But there are other challenges.
When you're taking these drugs, whether you have food or not, you have to take them at the right time and the right time. The second challenge is that there is that stigma where you have a visitor in your house and your time of taking the drug has come, but you fear for that person to know whether you are HIV or not.
The National AIDS Control Council says there are approximately 1.6 million people confirmed to be living with HIV and AIDS in Kenya, but only about half are on ARV therapy.
Some of the challenges include stigma and discrimination, lack of meaningful involvement of people living with HIV and AIDS. Government has not yet synthesized the community on the guidelines, on the new guidelines.
The new WHO guidelines mean the number of people in Kenya who need ARVs could at least double. The government launched a new digital application, the Situation Room, to better coordinate response efforts. Users can tell how many people are infected with HIV and AIDS in an area, how many are on medication, and what amount of medicine is available in the local health facility. The government says the supply of ARVs is not a problem.
We have a minimum of 6 months worth of ARVs for people who are taking medicines in the country at any one time. And we distribute medicines to the facility on a monthly basis.
But getting people to come in for testing remains an issue. Authorities believe there could be as many as 500,000 more HIV-positive people in Kenya who don't know it yet, but could benefit from early treatment. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
This is African News Tonight on The Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to African News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Hayes Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our African News Tonight producer Bill Workinger and our engineer John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The American people stand in solidarity with the people of France in the wake of the recent and tragic terror attack in Paris. 129 people were killed in a string of coordinated assaults across the city Friday evening. U.S. President Barack Obama called the attacks an outrageous attempt to terrorize innocent civilians.
This is an attack not just on Paris. It's an attack not just on the people of France, but this is an attack on all of humanity and the universal values that we share.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry echoed the president's remarks, noting these are heinous, evil, vile acts. Those of us who can must do everything in our power to fight back against what can only be considered an assault on our common humanity. France is our oldest ally, said President Obama. The French people have stood shoulder to shoulder with the United States time and again. President Obama noted that the American people draw strength from the French people's commitment to life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness.
We want to be very clear that we stand together with them in the fight against terrorism and extremism. We're going to do whatever it takes to work with the French people and with nations around the world to bring these terrorists to justice and to go after any terrorist networks that go after our people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, exceptional future leaders will gather for this year's World Bank's Youth Summit to tell the story of young people's role in the fight against climate change. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests discussing how youth can inspire communities everywhere to take action. That's next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
What's up, Africa? It's Jackson Vunganyi.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Cape Town.
Can I be upfront with you? That's exactly what Nadia and I plan to do every Wednesday at 17:30 UTC. Upfront looks at issues that affect you.
Since the world is moving at a faster rate, there's need to have a major computer.
Interesting news.
Canadian man was sentenced for drunk driving after being pulled over in his mother's motorized wheelchair. 35-year-old man was fined and placed on probation.
And of course, music. No clouds in my stones. Entertainment, celebrities, you name it, we'll talk about it.
And of course, we love to hear from you. Send us your thoughts and comments. Our email address is upfront@voanews.com.
So don't forget to check us out every Wednesday at 17:30 UTC on The Voice of America.